Welcome to 1 in 7 on CHSR 97.9 on your FM dial. 1 in 7 is a twice-monthly show which will deal with issues relating to poverty. It is our hope to foster awareness and a better understanding of the problems associated with the fact that 1 in 7 Canadians live in poverty. Today's episode is the first of two parts. Our guest is Joanne, who has struggled with poverty through part of her adult life, including a brief period of homelessness. Joanne has a BA and master's in sociology and began her PhD at McMaster University. She left university and worked in the Department of Social Services for the City of Toronto, after which she moved to the East Coast and taught at St. Thomas University. Thank you so much for joining and sharing with us today, Joanne.
Thank you for having me, Kay. I appreciate the opportunity.
We'll begin with your personal experience and then later discuss things on a socio-political basis, if that's okay with you.
It's fine.
Much like the five stages of grief proposed back in the 1970s by Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance, I would suggest that there are also stages, for want of a better term, in dealing with poverty. And like the stages of grief, the order varies for everyone. What five words would you choose, in no particular order, to describe your experience of poverty and then expand on each?
Okay, that's interesting, because I was thinking about this, and I think that if somebody is finds themselves in a position of poverty, and it is something that goes on beyond a period of 3 months, the impact is profound. The first word that comes to mind is shock, because I had no understanding. I grew up thinking that if someone was sick, unable to work, that we lived in a country that would take care of those people. And when I discovered what the level of that care was going to be, I was shocked and profoundly disappointed.
And, okay, so that's the first of five.
Yeah, I went into the Department of Social Services in a wheelchair and was informed that, effective immediately, my income was to drop by about 70%, that I was going to be given $600 a month, approximately, to live on, and that was to take care of everything, which so brings me to the next word I would think of, which was loss. Because of this, the level of drop in my income, $600 a month, my rent was $750. So that meant immediately that I would no longer be able to live in the apartment that I was living in. The list of losses, it just goes on and on. I mean, once you're vulnerable financially, everything starts to crumble. I was doing physical therapy at the time because I had a femur injury, broken femur. So it didn't just mean looking for a new place to live. It meant no longer being able to go to physical therapy because I couldn't afford the transportation. Everything became a source of stress. And so loss would be the second thing that comes to mind.
And what would be the third, do you think?
Well, with the changes that occurred so rapidly in my life. I began to sense that I was now excluded from a number of things that I guess I would say I had taken for granted. So word three is exclusion, from access to resources, from participating in the world on an equal level, even exclusion from entertainment, things that make life nicer, maybe a dinner out, a movie, because the idea is that if you're on welfare, those are luxuries that you don't deserve. So I honestly, within a few months, started to perceive myself as an outsider
in a world other?
Of people with money in their pockets.
Did you see yourself as other?
Absolutely. And I guess over time, there's an exposure to this really large group, shockingly large group of people that are in the same category as you. But even at that point, it's a sense of group otherness. And there's a little comfort in that.
And what would the fourth word be?
Well, for me, thinking about the fact that everything suddenly became a source of stress, groceries, what am I going to do for groceries? How am I going to get from point A to B? Everything became a point of stress. And having been a student and a single parent, I was conditioned to being able to plan and budget, throughout my life, to have a certain sense of organization. But that all kind of fell away because if you don't have nearly enough money to take care of your basic needs, everything becomes a source of stress. And so for me, anxiety came into play and became a real issue. And so did depression. And that just complicated things even more. Unfortunately, too, if you do find yourself in a position of struggling with depression, anxiety, or other things that may or may not have anything to do with poverty, PTSD, etc., you will find that if you are without money and without insurance of any kind, you may have the will to help yourself, to seek the help you need. You may have the motivation to get better, but you are likely will be shocked to learn how little help there is and how difficult it's going to be to get the help that you need.
And what is the fifth and final, Joanne?
I would have to say, in all honesty, anger. I am angry. This is an emotional issue for me. I would say that when I look at it as a whole, when I look at how the fact that this standard of living for Canadians is either being ignored or accepted, and to add insult to injury, victims of poverty are also shamed and blamed for being poor. So anger, and it happens that New Brunswick has the lowest rates in Canada, and I've checked this over several years, and we are consistently, we receive the lowest rates. There have been no increases in spite of the fact we all know that $20 at the grocery store is nothing like it was even 10 years ago. But increases that I have seen were something to the effect of $2 to $3. So with the check was a long letter explaining that they were doing everything they could to improve the quality of their our lives and were pleased to announce an increase. And you get to the bottom of the page and you find out that increase is $2.80. I'm angry.
Well, I think most most people would be. Also, on the issue you mentioned about the social assistance rates in New Brunswick, the buying power of the rates in the 70s was higher than it is now.
Yes.
Which I find interesting. Now, poverty obviously happens regardless of one's background. Can you tell us under what circumstances you personally first dealt with poverty?
Okay, well, my background, I grew up in the suburbs of Mississauga, thinking that the world was kind and caring. I have to say that growing up, I didn't know that poverty existed. I was cocooned in the suburbs of Mississauga and didn't realize that the things that we had were such a struggle for so many people. It's probably not irrelevant that my family did fall apart when I was 15, and I was on my own at 16. And so I guess that would have been my first experience with being poor. But I was young and determined, and in spite of even on top of it being 16 and then with child, I did make plans. I wasn't going to succumb to a life of poverty. So as soon as I was able, I applied for university. I applied for student loans, and that's how I went about getting the BA and then the MA in sociology.
At one point, and this is several years later, I guess, at one point you had been in an accident and you were in a wheelchair and found you had no choice but to live in the women's shelter here in Fredericton. Can you tell us about that experience?
Right. That injury and that experience was unfortunately definitive for me for a number of years. I was teaching before the injury, and so when I mentioned going into the Department of Social Services, it was because my unemployment insurance had expired, and I was still to be in a wheelchair for another 6 months. So things became unmanageable. It was impossible, especially being physically as vulnerable as I was, to maintain a place to live, looking after myself. Things crumbled pretty quickly. And I found myself calling, looking in the phone book, checking to see if there was a homeless shelter. Where do people go when this happens to them? And I'll never forget my feelings of fear and humiliation when I was being wheeled into the door of that place. I decided that the only way I was going to stay sane was to put my sociologist's hat on and study it as a participant observation of inequality. And that probably did keep me sane through part of it. But the experience, it diminishes on so many levels. You're a full-grown adult, and once you become so vulnerable that you have to present yourself to a homeless shelter, it's to me, it's like you become a ward of the state, and you are treated like a child. There's a curfew. If you miss it, you spend the night outside. And this was the dead of winter. I remember they would commandeer our welfare checks because what a lot of people don't realize is you have to pay rent to live at the shelter. I can't remember the exact amount, but I know it was more than half of my check. And so you would have to go to the office and get your monthly check minus rent for the shelter. And I was baffled by that. I was trying to figure out, how are we supposed to save money to get first and last for a place, if we can find a place in Fredericton that we can afford with this check? How am I going to save for that if I'm only given enough to take care of my basic needs while I'm at the shelter? I couldn't believe that. And I really do think a lot of people just assume that people are choosing to live at the shelter because it's free. It's a free roof. It's not. And it's also, because of that, it's a barrier to getting out of it.
So they take 50% of your social assistance check for housing.
I don't want to commit to the amount. I haven't.
But it's more than 30%.
If I remember correctly, and if you were receiving medical welfare, you paid a higher rate of rent. I can't remember what the exact percentage of, but I know that it was highly significant.
Because apparently, if you're in housing, say, at a place like Evelyn Grove Manor, they take 30%.
Yes.
Which is sort of the bar that most provinces have. So for a provincial entity like the shelter to take more than 30% is shocking.
And again, I wouldn't want to say with surety without checking those figures.
Okay. But do you know, did they explain to you, Joanne, why if you're on medical EI, that your rate would be higher than if you were just on EI or whatever it was?
No, because it didn't operate like that. Explanations weren't given. It was more like directives. You know, you will turn over this, you will sign this, this will be your rate. And if I remember how it felt, it seems to me that when you were sitting in that office, you didn't feel like you could say, why am I paying more because I'm in a wheelchair? Why are you charging me more because I've been deemed too sick to work? No explanation was given.
It just doesn't seem rational, but then again. What do you go ahead? Sorry.
I'm sorry. I just the problem is that although the intentions may be right, you know, providing a roof, it really did seem to me that the bureaucracy of it was set up, and the mindset of it was set up in such a way as to keep people down. And if that sounds paranoid, I'm sorry, but that is what the feeling was. There was an experience I had there that I'll never forget, which I refer to as the Valentine's Day Massacre. Some university students who were aware of the fact that there were 13 or 14 women living at a homeless shelter in downtown Fredericton thought it would be a nice idea to bring us all mugs the night before Valentine's Day with chocolates and candies and a card, along with a rose in a vase. And they brought these down. And, you know, the gesture was well received. I could tell looking around that there were women there who had never received anything for Valentine's Day. And it lifted our spirits. We went to bed that night with our mugs and our flowers beside our bed, with a bit of a smile that night. When I woke up in the morning, I could hear people. I could tell by the tones of voices that people were upset about something. And I came to find out that what they were upset about was that the phones had been shut off, TV had been banned for the day. Why? Well, because we had broken the rule of no food in the room by bringing these mugs with the chocolates and putting them on our bedside tables. Now, nobody stopped us. Nobody said as we were going up the stairs, sorry, you have to leave those down here. They watched us take our cups up, and then the next day issued this decree that we were banned from phone and TV privileges for breaking the rule. Now, what that does to break people's spirit, I still don't understand it, and I don't think I ever will, how that kind of behavior is rationalized.
It sounds like a bad plot in a B movie.
I felt so often like I was in a detention home for wayward women, and had to keep reminding myself that I hadn't committed any crime.
What do you feel you've lost and gained through experiencing poverty?
Well, I guess if I'm going to go first with lost, I would say that I have lost my innocence and my faith that our country takes care of its people, even its most vulnerable. That's been a very discouraging, unsettling thing for me to learn, and it feels like a loss to me. And the loss of so many potential experiences and opportunities because of the barriers that poverty puts up. It complicates everything, including trying to improve your lot in life. And I wish people could understand that. Once you get caught in having to be constantly concerned with not being able to meet your basic needs, striving for other things is so much more difficult than I think people realize. But what I have gained is greater humility, greater compassion, and an understanding of, you know, sometimes you look at people and think, gee, why do they act that way? Why don't they just, why don't they improve things for themselves? Well, I realize now that it's a lot more complicated than it often might appear. And I also think that I have gained a resolve. I mean, I've always cared about these things, but more than anything, I would like to try to do what I can to make the situation a better one. There's no reason for people to be struggling and suffering like this in a country like this.
Well, thank you very much for joining us today, Joanne. I think we've all learned something here.
My pleasure. I could have talked to you for another hour, easy.
Well, we have been speaking with Joanne, who has given us her first voice account of living in poverty in New Brunswick. Please note that this episode is the first of two parts. One in Seven's technician is Calm Lee McPhee, and I am your host, Kay Brookland. Until next time, this is 1 in 7 on CHSR-FM. If you would like to access the podcast of our show, please visit chsrfm.ca/1-in-7.